Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Travel with us to the cold Arctic as we talk about a new industry that is booming up there. Hey, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Campbell. It is great to have you with us as we study our business article for this month. And in the studio with my co-host, Peter. Hey, Peter.
Hey, Campbell. Hello, everyone. Good to be here.
All right, Peter. What are we talking about today?
Oh, we are talking about it's our business article, but in a way, it's like a business opportunity here that we're going to be talking about involving satellites and the far north of the planet.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, satellites, I think most people have heard of, but for those maybe who are living under a rock and aren't as familiar, can you explain what are satellites and what do they do?
Right. A satellite is a very, very, think of it as a very, very, very small spaceship, unmanned. Some satellites, as I understand, are not much bigger than a motor scooter. And companies and governments launch them into the atmosphere and they orbit around the planet Earth and they take pictures of the planet and they do all sorts of, can collect all sorts of data about the planet through various instruments that they have on them and relay it back to people on Earth, ground stations, so that we can have things like weather forecasts and global positioning, you know, when we're driving in a new neighborhood.
Right.
That's all by satellites. Our cell phones often work by satellites. Even Wi-Fi increasingly is being used. Satellites are being used to spread that around.
Right. So it sounds very scientific and a lot of tech. And some people might be like, oh, this doesn't have a lot to do with me or my life. But actually, satellites are a big part of daily life now.
Right. And getting bigger.
Yeah. So with all this growth, there needs to be some new infrastructure. And where are they going to put this infrastructure? That's what this article is all about, right? So we're talking about the Arctic, okay? Now, for those unfamiliar, can you explain what the Arctic is?
Right. The Arctic is the region of the planet around the North Pole. It's funny. You can help me with this. I don't think the region around the South Pole is called the Arctic.
It's called the Antarctic.
The Antarctic. That's right. The seventh continent, Antarctica.
Yeah.
And the South Pole, North Pole is just the Arctic region or the Arctic Circle, maybe you've heard of. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's all it means. It's just the land around the North Pole, including the North Pole.
Right. So again, they're sending these satellites into space. They need places where all this data that's being collected is then relayed back down to Earth, right? And so they need computers and infrastructure to be able to receive this information. Where are they going to build it? Well, right now they're looking at the Arctic. All right, so let's get into our article. If you have the magazine, please open up to our article for September 1st, the Arctic Satellite Boom. If you don't have a magazine, I do recommend that maybe you can pause the program and go to your local bookstore or wherever you can purchase a magazine and study along with us. I think that is the best way to be able to write your notes and be able to follow along. All right, so without further ado, let's get into our article.
Arctic Satellite Boom. Space race drives the rush to build ground stations in the Arctic. Satellite operators are looking north, way north. As the US, China, and others compete in space, the need for fast and frequent communication links with satellites orbiting near the North Pole is making Arctic ground stations a hot commodity. That's turned Dead Horse, Alaska, into an unlikely outpost in the space race. The community on the North Slope Tundra, about 850 miles north of Anchorage by road, is the gateway to the Prudhoe Bay oil field. Virtually everything there exists to support the extraction of fossil fuels. There is no hospital, bank, or school, but there are prefab dorms for workers and a general store selling bear spray. Dead Horse also has infrastructure for satellites, including fiber optic cables to transmit data. You can only put satellite dishes where there's fiber, said Christopher Richens, founder of RBC Signals LLC, which operates 8 antennas in Dead Horse. Otherwise, the data comes down and it's got nowhere to go.
The data comes down and it's got nowhere to go. Ooh, that sounds like a problem.
Poor little data.
All right. So we are talking about the Arctic satellite boom. Well, we've talked about the word Arctic. We've talked about satellite. What does the word boom mean?
Right. Well, boom, most commonly, I think, is an onomatopoeia, and that means a word that sounds like what it describes. And boom, we probably know from comic books, is an explosion of some sort. Boom, like that. And it means roughly the same thing here, only it's not just describing a sound effect, it's describing an event. It's describing a rapid, explosive growth of some kind, a boom, like a boom in electric cars or a boom in, well, in this case, in Arctic satellites.
Right, or an economic boom where there's a lot of money being made, that type of thing.
Yeah.
All right, so our deck says, space race drives the rush to build ground stations in the Arctic. What are we referring to when we talk about space race?
Right. Well, here, space race, kind of playing off the term arms race, which was popular mainly in the 20th century, late 20th century, as the Soviet Union and the United States were engaged in a nuclear arms race to see who could have more nuclear weapons. But any two countries or more can be in an arms race. It doesn't have to be a nuclear one. And in this case, it's not about military per se. It's about space and the race to have the most influence in space, to have the most presence in space, political, economic, you name it. It's a race between various countries in the world, powerful countries for the most part.
Right. And this is driving the rush to build ground stations in the Arctic. So again, they are sending all these satellites into space, but without places on Earth to receive the information that they are collecting or the information that's getting sent back and forth, the data has nowhere to go, right? So they need these ground stations, these places to collect the data that's being collected, all right? Now, satellite operators are looking north, way north. Now, that's an interesting phrase. I love it. Way north. It's very conversational, right?
Right, right. It's just a term of emphasis, really. It means very much. How far north? Way north.
Right.
Means farther, probably, than you're thinking.
Yeah. So, if you are in Taipei, you know, we're not just talking about whatever's north of Taipei, you know, Geelong or whatever. We're talking about way, 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 you know, all the way up in the Arctic, okay, to a place where most people don't go, right? And here we talk about several countries, the U.S., China, and others compete in space. The need for fast and frequent communication links with satellites orbiting near the North Pole is making Arctic ground stations a hot commodity. So basically what is happening is, as Peter mentioned earlier, we're trying to have more influence in space and we're trying to collect as much data as we can from these satellites. And because there's a lot of information getting transmitted back and forth, there needs to be more ground stations, right? There needs to be places where they can transmit the data. And so these ground stations are becoming a hot commodity. That's an interesting phrase.
Yes, a hot commodity. A commodity meaning a substance or a product that can be bought or sold. That's all a commodity is. There's a commodities market in which the anticipated future of a certain commodity like gold or silver is traded by speculators, and just the way stocks are traded. But yeah, the idea of a commodity here, a hot commodity, means something something that is going to, anticipated to be very popular and is going to sell very well, is going to be in great demand.
Yeah. And we hear about a place called Dead Horse Alaska, which I feel like is a very interesting, it's a very apropos name.
Yeah,
in some ways. I mean, the word dead there, I mean, dead usually just like there's very little life. And it does sound like a place that doesn't have a lot of life.
Or horses, for that matter.
Right. Yeah. So Dead Horse Alaska, it's turned this place, Dead Horse Alaska, into an unlikely outpost in the space race. So let's break down this sentence here. First, what is an outpost?
Right. An outpost is a group of buildings in a place far away from cities or towns, usually a military camp or a place for trade, and sort of representing the outermost reach of a society. You know, the like in Taipei here, we might say we have an outpost of Taipei in maybe some island somewhere in the Pacific.
Right.
Would be an outpost.
Okay. So we have this outpost, and it's not just an outpost, it's an unlikely outpost. An unlikely meaning surprising, not what people expected. So why is Dead Horse Alaska an unlikely outpost in the space race? What do you think?
Right. Well, partly because it's almost nothing except place to house oil workers.
Right.
It goes on to say the community on the North Slope tundra, meaning Earth, which is so far north on the planet that trees don't grow there. Mm-hmm. The ground below the surface is permanently frozen. We call that a tundra. This is a particular tundra, the North Slope tundra. It is the gateway to the Prudhoe Bay oil field, and mm-hmm. get into the vocab in the next sentence. But the point is just Dead Horse is the nearest town by the Prudhoe Bay oil field.
Right. And the biggest city is Anchorage, and it's about 850 miles north of Anchorage by road. Okay. So basically, there's nothing there. This is not a place that's full of tourism and people go and visit for vacation. It's literally there to just support the extraction of fossil fuels, right? So this is where people, as you mentioned, it's just to pull oil out of the ground.
Right. To extract something, yeah, to take something out of something else.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, we said that, you know, the dead horse is very apropos because there's not a lot of life or a lot of things happening there, right? So it says here in the sentence, there's no hospital, bank, or school, but there are some prefab dorms for workers and a general store selling bear spray, which is interesting.
Yeah, nice detail.
So prefab just means it's short for prefabricated, which means that something that is manufactured in advance and can be assembled easily. I'm thinking of like IKEA.
IKEA sells prefab furniture.
Yeah. So these dorms, okay, so places where these workers live, they're made offsite and then brought over there and they can be assembled pretty easily. And that's pretty much all that exists out there. So this is why it's an unlikely place, because it seems like there's not a lot going on there, but they're going there to set up these satellite ground stations, right?
Right. It sounds like what we would describe in English as the boondocks, mm-hmm. or the boonies,
yeah.
which is a kind of negative term used to describe a place that is just so far away from the action, so right. far away from the center of society or the excitement. You know, it'll often describe a small town way, 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 way out in the wilderness, out in the boondocks,
right.
as we say.
So if there's no hospital, no bank, no school, probably no mass transit, no public transit, anything like that. Why is this such a valuable place? Why are people considering building these ground stations there?
Right. Well, first, of course, because it is in the Arctic region. But secondly, as the paragraph here tells us, Dead Horse has infrastructure for satellites. Infrastructure, important word to know, meaning basic systems that are needed for a country or an organization to work effectively. And that basic systems would be like transportation, power supplies, or in this case, for Arctic satellites, fiber optic cables.
Right. So that is the key element here, fiber optic cables. So these are very thin glass or plastic thread, which through light can travel to carry information, especially in phone, television, and computer systems. So we all use fiber optic cables if you live in the city and you have internet. Most likely has something to do with fiber optic cables, right? So this is one of the crucial elements to making Dead Horse such a valuable place, okay? It has these fiber optic cables to transmit the data. Again, if you don't have these places to transmit the data, you collect all this information, it has nothing, the data has nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Right. So you can only put satellite dishes where there's fiber. So, you know, some place like the Amazon rainforest might not be ideal because very likely there aren't fiber optic cables there.
Exactly.
Right. And this is why Dead Horse is so important. Okay. All right. Well, let's read the rest of today's article and then we will come back and talk a little bit more.
Growing demand throughout the Arctic. We will see more ground stations. We'll see more dishes at existing ground stations. We'll see more cables, said Michael Byers, a professor at the University of British Columbia, who does research on outer space and Arctic sovereignty. Climate change is further opening the region to shipping and heightening its strategic importance. A Chinese shipping company plans regular summer routes through the Arctic Ocean to Europe, part of a plan for a polar silk road. Beijing has also vastly increased the number of its polar satellites, according to Jonathan McDowell, an astrophysicist. Donald Trump's proposed Golden Dome space-based defense system will likely include satellites focused on the area. Northrop Grumman Corp. has a deal to make two polar orbiting satellites by 2031. Boeing Co. won a Space Force contract for two satellites and an option for two more. What's good about a polar orbit is you pass over every spot of the globe, said David Marsh, founder of Washington-based consulting firm Space for Earth, and an Arctic expert formerly at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. The entire Earth is rotating underneath you as you go around.
Okay, so we have a lot of information. We hear about a lot of different countries and companies. And basically, to summarize this section, technology is becoming more and more common, right? And it's becoming more and more important in our daily lives, but also in the economics of the world and also the, you know, geopolitics. And with this rise in technology, there needs to be more, as we said, the word infrastructure to be able to handle the technology. And this is why more and more countries and companies are looking at the Arctic, right? So we hear from Michael Byers, and what does he say about ground stations?
Right. Well, he says we'll see more ground stations. In the coming months and years and decades, we'll see more ground stations. We'll see more dishes at existing ground stations. The dish, I mean, short for that big radar dish that, you know, we've all seen outside an observatory to look at the stars or to get data from satellites in this case.
Or cable TV for our homes.
Exactly. Yes, that's all from the dish. And we'll see more cables, says Professor Byers, who is described, a little vocab word here to toss in, he does research on outer space and Arctic sovereignty.
Yes.
Now, sovereignty, the word means the power of a country to control its own government, which has not always been the case for a lot of countries in history. They've been controlled by other countries' governments. So Arctic sovereignty, you put those two words together and it's like, wait a minute. The Arctic isn't a country. It's not a political body, a nation state of some sort.
Right.
So what does it mean for, what does Arctic sovereignty mean?
Yeah.
And that's part of what is why we wanted to run this article, is just to remind ourselves about the places on Earth, not many, but some, in which, you know, we're all kind of agreeing to share it, but human beings can only share things up to a point.
Yeah. Reminds me of the phrase, when the United States was being settled, they called the Wild Wild West,
yeah.
Right? And then, the place that was not settled out, in Arizona, California, that kind of area, the Wild Wild West, right? And I feel like space is kind of the new Wild Wild West,
Final frontier.
Yeah. The final frontier, yes. So it's kind of a new place where people are settling, and there are no maybe set laws yet. But I feel like slowly people are starting to establish laws and rules for how they're going to be interacting and sovereignty, right, as you were talking about. So he's studying basically space law and who gets to control the Arctic, who gets land, who gets, who has power there.
Right. And for readers who are interested in this, I would recommend them back to the February 2026 issue of Advanced, in which our cover story is called Lunar Law, and the article therein discusses figuring out lunar sovereignty, the sovereignty of the moon, which in this case is similar to the Arctic in that it is not the possession of any single nation.
Right.
So what happens? Do the nations just keep sort of sharing it, or does one nation get to take over the moon in some way?
Right.
You can read about that in the February 26th issue of Advanced, because the idea is the same, sort of unclaimed non-sovereign territory, whether on Earth or in space.
Right. So who gets to control it? Who gets to use it?
Yeah.
All this is in discussion, right? And so next we get to talk a little bit about why all this is so important, right? It says climate change is further opening the region to shipping and heightening its strategic importance. So, we talked about earlier about technology, but besides technology, the Arctic is important for another reason as well.
Right, exactly, for shipping. And climate change, I believe the author's point here is that as, the Arctic is warming and the entire planet is warming, it means there's less ice up there.
Mm-hmm.
There's less glaciers and icebergs, and it's easier for ships to pass through carrying goods to the other side of the world, basically.
Right.
And so that places increased or heightened strategic importance to the place as well, not even talking about satellites for the moment.
Yeah. And we have an interesting phrase here, Polar Silk Road, right?
Yeah,
so the Silk Road, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, that was the route that people used for trade.
Right. Between Europe and Asia, broadly speaking.
Yeah.
The East and West.
Yeah. But now we have the Polar Silk Road. So it's the idea of, now that there's more technology, boats, and you can travel further in a shorter amount of time, things are getting transported further away,
right?
And so this is the Polar Silk Road. So it's no longer just across the Eurasian landmass. It's now up into the Arctic through the ocean, right? And there's goods that are being transported. And Beijing, again, China, has also vastly increased the number of its polar satellites, according to Jonathan McDowell, an astrophysicist. So China has a big stake in this Arctic satellite boom area. Now, Donald Trump, president of the United States currently, he has proposed this Golden Dome space-based defense system. Now, I've heard this term, Golden Dome, but it wasn't until this article that I really took the time to really understand it, right?
Mm.
What do you know about this Golden Dome?
Probably less than you do. I, too, am just familiar with the term. A dome is, a big curved covering over something.
Right. And I'll be honest, when I first heard it, I was like, is he going to build a physical,
an actual
gold, actual
dome.
Thing
yeah,
around,
made of gold.
around the United States,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I just imagine this huge bowl.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Over the United States. But that's not what we're referring to. It's basically a space-based defense system. It's leveraging satellites to track, watch, and defend against threats, right? So basically, if you imagine the satellites are floating over the U.S., and basically if there are anything that comes to try to attack the U.S., whether it's bombs or missiles or things like that, they're able to use the satellites as a defensive measure.
Right. And the satellites are positioned kind of in a dome shape up in space?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Right, yeah. And so the Golden Dome is basically able to protect the United States, okay? And so again, this is all based on satellites, another reason why having these ground stations are so important, all right? And we hear about a company, Northrop Grumman Corp., and they've made a deal to make two polar orbiting satellites by 2031. Boeing Company won a Space Force contract for two satellites and an option for two more. So again, the space race, more and more companies and countries are racing and trying to grab a hold of space. Right. Again, back to that wild, wild west concept. Back then, it was the gold rush, right? Yeah. Everybody rushing out to get gold. And now I feel like everybody's rushing to get their piece of space.
Right, right. And so you need ground stations for the data that your space machines, your satellites, are going to be collecting.
Right, yeah. And also, those are the places where they're going to be controlling the satellites as well, right, I assume. All right, what's good about a polar orbit is that you pass over every spot of the globe. Can you explain this sentence a little bit?
Yeah. This is actually a very helpful sentence in terms of understanding what exactly a polar satellite is and why all these stations are being built so far north.
Yeah.
Because I read this through first time and I thought, well, sure, but can't they just put the station in Mexico or something? Mm-hmm. Can't it? It's all data, you know, it's all traveling at the speed of light.
Right.
Can't it just collect it in Mexico? But the point is, a polar satellite orbits the Earth from pole to pole. That's why they call it a polar satellite. So it basically does this big north to south to north loop over the Earth. It travels real fast, can do one entire loop in about 100 minutes. But while this is happening, remember, the Earth itself is turning from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
So a satellite that is continuously looping a north-south loop over the Earth can take pictures of the entire planet as it turns beneath it on that east-west axis.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, so the data, therefore, this is why the ground stations need to be close to the poles, is because the data can only be collected from the satellites if the planet itself isn't in the way.
Right.
And so if the only ground station to collect the data is in Mexico, then the satellite is only going to be able to transmit that data once or twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if the ground station is at one of the poles, then like we said, it can complete a polar orbit in about 100 minutes. That means multiple times a day, the ground station can retrieve the satellite's data.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, like the pole is, even as it's spinning, it's pretty much stationary, quote unquote. Like the relative position of the pole stays the same.
Right. Yeah. The axis of the pole. The satellite is going north pole to south pole back up to the north pole, but the planet itself is turning from east to west, from left to right, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And so each time the satellite is just taking pictures of the entire planet as it's – now, I'm illustrating here with my fingers in the studio. The readers can't see this, unfortunately.
I can see it, and I'm enjoying it.
Campbell can see it. But that's why the stations particularly have to be as close to the north pole as possible, because that gives them tenfold opportunities to retrieve the data.
Right. Okay. So this is a very, very packed article. Lots to discuss. And we have a lot more to discuss on day two of this article. So make sure you come back and join us again tomorrow. Until then, this is Campbell.
This is Peter.
We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.